This episode is brought to you in partnership with Supply Chain Manitoba and the Manitoba Trucking Association, working together to support workforce development and a stronger future for the industry here in Manitoba.
Welcome to the Move Rural Canada podcast, where every week we showcase incredible businesses in rural and northern Canada. Businesses that are not only growing, but are looking to hire.
We're here to show you companies and communities outside of the big cities that are building stronger and more inclusive workplaces. Workplaces that want and are encouraging newcomers, immigrants, and refugees to work with them.
Let us be your guides to help you find the best places in Canada to not only immigrate, but build a career and settle.
I'm your host, Leah Mitchell.
And I am your co-host, Lindsay Rubinek.
Join us as we learn about all of the amazing career opportunities in places that you may not have ever thought of moving.
Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Move Rural Canada podcast. Today, we have on Bill Rempel. He is the CEO of Steve's Livestock Transport. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning. Welcome. It's great to be here.
Good. Thank you for coming today. We really appreciate it. We love having companies on and talking about what they're doing, the support. So we're going to get right into it. So how about we just start off with, can you tell us about your company?
Yeah, Steve's Livestock Transport was started in 1987 by an individual named Steve Brandt, who's still part of the business today. He started with needing to provide an income for his family and started with a gooseneck trailer and one truck hauling dairy cattle to different places. And today we employ 475 people, and we're in the Prairie provinces. So we have terminals in Blumenort, Manitoba in the southeast, and Brandon, and in central Alberta in Red Deer. There's four different business units that I look after. The trucking end, there's Blue Water Wash, which we're in the same locations. We have about 160 employees in that business. We have United Training School. That's a class one training school that is in also in Blumenort, Steinbach, and Winkler in Brandon. And then we have BVT Truck and Trailer Repair, which is a heavy-duty repair shops where we employ about 60 people.
All across, like I said, all across the Prairie provinces, which is also great. You do a couple of different things then. Can you speak a bit to what each company does?
So it's all built around the transport side. So the trucking is the core of our business. That's the majority of our business. And that is today we're in the agricultural space. So we want to ultimately be the leading provider on the agricultural transport side. So we haul a lot of pigs, cattle, and grain. And that's the core of what we do. And then once you start a business like that on the livestock transport side, biosecurity is critical. And so we started with building wash bays. And today we own 27 bays where we wash trailers, we dry trailers, we heat treat trailers at high temperatures to kill bacteria and diseases. And then same thing, if you have trucks and trailers, you need a shop. And so we have the heavy duty BVT, heavy duty repair shops, and we do retail work and for our own fleet. So it's a mix of both. And the same on the washing side, we do a lot of washing for outside people. So it's open to the public. And the training school. So if you have a trucking business, you need to train drivers. And so we have training schools. So it's all built around the trucking.
Well, that's absolutely amazing, Bill. I do want to actually, so you mentioned that you are in agriculture and you have transport. And so you have multiple things going on. So being a workforce consultant, I have to ask, where do you get all your workers from? And how does that all evolve? Do you have like newcomers? Do you hire people from within Canada? How do you recruit and attract your workers?
We try to have different channels where we attract workers from so that you're not reliant on one particular channel. So historically, being livestock transport, a lot of rural kids, rural people that live on farms, they have some hobby farms, they're familiar with animals. That used to be 20 years ago where the majority of our workforce came from. That has shifted. So as more people move off the farm into more to the urban areas, that has really shifted. So we have channels from new people to Canada. So through the immigration programs, we do hire people with no experience so that we train them, put them through the schools. That's part of why we have United, so that we can help them get their class one license and then on the job training as well. So if you're hauling livestock, even if you have class one training, aren't familiar with animals, we'll do up to 6 weeks of in-cab training. So where we have a driver trainer with you, helping you load and unload animals.
So Bill, how important is that? Because we all know that class one is, you know, extremely hard to obtain at times. So tell us how important it is to have your class one and what all goes into that. And is it regulated and how does it all work for people who may not be familiar with your industry?
Yeah, so the trucking world has certainly made some improvements over the last decades, and particularly there was very public accident in Humboldt a number of years ago, and that drove a lot of legislative change straight across the country. A lot of that has been really good. I wish it was more uniform across the country so that the different provinces had exactly the same regulations, but it's better than what it was. So there's a few different programs. The main one that we're part of is 244 hours of training before you go for your license, so that you have the required hands-on training in order to get your class one license. So if you're new, you haven't driven before, that's certainly something that we would be looking for, that you have that. Then we will do training once you're in a truck here. We'll still do in-cab training.
Okay. And so I think I just want to dig a little further into that, because you talked about the incident that happened and so on and so forth. So if we have people that are, you know, newly arrived to Canada and they're interested in getting into the transport industry, what advice would you give them? Where should they look so they are doing it properly and legally? So just if you can expand on that, I think that'd be a great help to our listeners.
And red flags too, right? What should they be looking out for?
Exactly.
Yeah, for I would encourage everyone, if they're sitting down with potential employers, listen to the conversation, listen to the questions that they're asking you. Do they talk about values at all? What's the heartbeat of the organization? Because try to get to know them. And that should be, they should want to get to know you. So that 3 months in, you're not surprised and they're not surprised. So you want to get the heartbeat of that company, what they're part of, what's important to them, and do they talk about values? There are certainly flags to watch. And in the trucking industry, there's unfortunately a thing what's often referred to as Driver Inc. And that's, it's grown substantially over the last number of decades. And definitely that should be a red flag if they're trying to, if you're an employee, you're going to be driving their truck, you're an employee. If they offer you a contract, so the value proposition might be that you'll make more money. There will be no deductions. And so what you earn is what will go into your pocket. That is illegal. And for you as a potential employee, it's also not good for you. Because with those benefits, their health and dental benefits, there's workers' compensation, that helps you. It helps your family. And particularly if you're new to the country, those are the benefits that you're entitled to. So don't... those are flags that I certainly would be watching for. And it's unfortunate that we even have to talk about these things, but we need to talk about them so that people are aware.
Just one more question, then I'm going to get Leah to jump in. But is there some websites or is there some resource material that we can post for our listeners?
Manitoba Trucking Association and the Canadian Trucking Alliance both have detailed information as far as what Driver Inc. is, but it's often referred to as Driver Inc. and the shortcuts that are there. So there's certainly those two websites. So that's the Canadian Trucking Alliance and Manitoba Trucking Association both have good information on that. I think the similar in when you're looking at training schools, and if you don't have your class ones and you're evaluating training schools that you're going to go to, do it a little bit of due diligence as far as what that landscape looks like. Ask for some references of students that have gone through it. They good companies will gladly give you those references. And if they're hesitant to do that, that's just a small flag, but it's a flag. You should ask a few more questions. Ask them where they sit with pass rates. try to inquire. And again, I talked about values before, try to get their heartbeat. What do they talk about? Is their goal to get you your class one license as quickly as possible? Or is their goal to equip you, to teach you, to have hands-on so that you're comfortable when you get behind the wheel of a truck? Do they want you to be a safe driver? What is that conversation when you're having it with them? It's, if you're going to be paying them to help you train you, ask those questions. It's good for yourself to understand that, and it's your right to know those things. And if they're hesitant at any point, it should be a flag.
No, absolutely. No, thank you. So I have a couple questions. So obviously you're in the transportation industry, and I think a lot of times when people think transportation, they simply think trucking, but there's so many more opportunities in transportation than being a driver. So can you talk about some of the other opportunities that people have working in the industry as well?
Yeah, so we have a number of people that have been drivers with us or owner operators, or have started as drivers and then become an owner operator. Owner operator is where they go out and buy their own truck and then they license it exclusively for a particular carrier. So we have a number of those. You take on more risk, but you also get a little bit of higher pay so that there's a reward for that risk. We've had a number of people that moved into administration. So whether it's dispatch into management, it opens a door. And so if you love being on the road and trucking, that might be a good fit for you. But if you want to keep going and move on, most of our driver trainers, I shouldn't say most of them, all of them have all been on the truck. And then as they get older, they want to be home more. They've gone into getting licensed and trained to be driver trainers and help others attain their license.
And so just because my background is, you know, in the realm of language and supporting newcomers in that realm, are there challenges with hiring newcomers, maybe with lower level language? How do you adjust to that? Do you offer any sort of supports to help people progress through, or how what does that look like if someone comes to you and maybe has a little bit of lower level of English?
It depends on the role. So I mentioned earlier in Blue Water Wash, we have 160 employees. So you need to be able to take general direction. So you need to have a minimum level of English language in order to do the job appropriately. On the trucking side, it's a higher level that's required, because you need to be able to interact with the customer. You need to be able to interact with the different law enforcement levels if you're going across the scales, and also with the people that send information. So your reading has to be good, because most of it is electronic. And yeah, so we do offer and have recommendations that we direct people towards. If they're coming in, the language isn't quite there, we direct them to the different resources that are available in the community.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to add on to that, maybe not in terms of English, but since my background's in immigration, I'm just going to jump right into that in terms of, Bill, are you aware, like given your position and you may not be as familiar with it, but are you aware of the different immigration programs that your company assists with in terms of helping people that are, you know, temporary workers and then they want to transition into permanent residency?
So we're aware of some of them. I'm not sure if we're aware of all of them, but we've certainly hired through different programs. So at the start of the Ukraine war, there was a program there. We hired several different groups through that. So we have a vibrant Ukrainian workforce, particularly based out of Brandon. We have a lot of them there in Blumenort as well. So certainly through that program, also in Alberta, we hired through that program. The LMIA program, we have a little bit through there as well. So we have a different, several different programs that we've utilized in recruiting.
Have you seen, you had talked about people kind of climbing the ranks in your businesses. And so do you have any success stories, or can you just tell us in general about newcomers and their ability to rise and be promoted throughout your various businesses?
Yeah, we have some phenomenal success stories, and it is motivating for me to see that when people grab those opportunities. And I'm going to tell you about one particular person. And unfortunately, she just told us she's leaving us.
Oh, no.
But I'm super happy for her. Oksana came and moved to Canada at the start of the Ukraine war. Her and her brother together, they went from Ukraine to Germany. They were in Germany a few months and then were able to get into Canada, get a visa, and she applied with us. And both her brother drives truck for us, and Oksana started in dispatch. So she was an administrative person in our Brandon office, and they adjusted, adapted, they got involved in the community. And part of what attracted them to Brandon was the Ukrainian community. They knew that there was a vibrant Ukrainian community in that area. They connected with them, were able to find a place to live. Housing costs definitely, you know, in some parts like this is better than moving to Toronto, Vancouver, some of those other bigger centers. And that was also, and then she got the job and she got engaged. And so whether it was with the people in the workplace, she started volunteering in the community, and she started her as a partner and started her own business in Brandon. So that's what she's leaving us for. Yeah. So multi-cook Brandon, that's what Oksana is going to. We also hired an individual in our wash bay that was new to the country and limited English skills. And he started washing trailers in the wash bay, but he was a quiet, resilient individual, and he kept learning, never complained. He got promoted within the first year to a lead hand, then to a shift supervisor, and just has that ability to wants to learn, wants to grow, and those opportunities are there. And I think it's fantastic when people, you know, see those opportunities.
And I think too, that's one of the biggest success, the keys to success if you're moving to new countries, like you said, to get involved, to volunteer and take those opportunities when they come, you know, because you don't know when it, or you don't know what it's going to lead into, right? And, you know, a lot of people forget, it takes a long time to learn English. I always say it takes about 500 hours per one level. So it's going to take years. So people have to kind of, you know, unless you're going to sit at home for 10 hours a day, it's going to take time. So just exactly get involved, get opportunities, and just you'll continue to grow.
And Oksana is a great example. Did some due diligence ahead of time, connected with certain communities, did their research, and they felt Brandon was going to be a good fit because of the cost. There was a Ukrainian community that they could be part of. They asked that community a bunch of questions, then started looking for jobs and what would be a fit for them, continued to develop in their English language. And I would say that's a phenomenal example of how to go through this process. Top of that, they got involved almost right away in volunteering in the community.
Bill, you hit on something that is so important. And I feel in my industry as an immigration consultant, and I feel that as newcomers, this is really overlooked, is that I'll give you a great example. RCIP, the Rural Community Immigration Pilot, just came out, right? So various communities across Canada were awarded this, and it's a phenomenal program. However, what I see far too often right now is people saying, oh, you know, Steinbach has it, which is where you're closely situated, right? Brandon has it. And so right away they say, okay, here's the trades, here's the industry sector, here's all this. But what they don't do is they don't say, you know what you should really do is check out the time or take the time to check out the community and if it's for you. Because what happens a lot of times is that people come in, they come into a community where they know nothing about, they fail to do their research, and then they take the position. And unfortunately, the community is not a match for them, or it's not what they expected. And then it's not a win-win for the employer or the community, or even actually even for the newcomer, obviously. So I want to just say thank you for pointing that out. And I think that's a great example of when you do your research into a community, not just about a job or immigration program, that how successful you could actually be. So that's, I love that. Great example. Thank you for sharing that.
And I think there's plenty of jobs available. We're fortunate that, you know, we go through different economic seasons where it might shift a bit, but for the most part, Canada, the prairie provinces, there's a lot of jobs. So if you take a little bit of time, and I'm sure it's intimidating when you're new to ask questions, but ask friends, try to get involved in the community and ask, because there is lots that is available that I'm sure they're not aware of. And in our business, we have a training and development subsidy. So we have internal training. So once you become part of the business, we we provide you training like the class ones. But beyond that, we provide a subsidy program that if it's for future development, we'll often do 50%. If it's specific to the job, it's 100%, but you can go and do additional training and development. But it's a great way to build your career and increase your earning potential.
Yeah, no, exactly. So in terms of, like Lindsay was talking about, sort of, you know, doing your due diligence, doing your research, do you at all help people sort of settle in the area? Let's say you had someone coming, do you offer sort of someone that kind of help them find that place locally, find those homes and settlements? Or what does that look like? If you had someone, say, coming from a different province, they got hired, what would that look like for them?
So that's a great question. We have a number of different people in our organization that help people settle. So not necessarily that we'll go out and do things for them, but we connect them with different groups and direct them to the programs that are available. And each community is maybe slightly different, but we certainly connect them with the right people that can help them.
So Bill, let's talk a little bit about your history, and I'm wondering if you can tell everyone about your experience as immigrating to Canada when you were a young person.
Yeah, so I was 12 years old when I moved to Canada. I knew a few words of English, but it was very, very limited. And, you know, at 12 years old, first it's the excitement of travel, going to a new place. I've heard of this Canada. And I came from South America. So seeing black dirt, I interpret that as swamp. So all I saw was swamp when I came to Manitoba. So there's so many different things that are new, and the smells are new. The, you know, what I talked about, the black dirt, I was used to red dirt. So when I saw black, you know, the only black dirt I knew was in the swampy areas. It's a lot of those things that are new. There's excitement with that. The first winter was definitely an adventure. That was something that nobody that can prepare you for. Trust me, you cannot explain what frostbite feels like until you've experienced it a few times. And then you know why they put a thing called a toque on your head and cover your ears. But at that age, there's a lot of that stuff that was good and fun. Playing in snow was fun. The then going into the school and immigrating, transitioning was very difficult. There was many seasons that I found extremely difficult. So those grade 7, 8, that era for me was a lot of trauma. And so that was a very difficult season for me to transition into. And you're transitioning your whole life. It's language. It's how, what you eat. It's the smells. It's how you dress. All of that is new. And to transition that, it, for me, was a very difficult season. And I think that's often what I think about today when people come here. What are they experiencing? What are their children experiencing? How's the family? Where's their connections? And because for me, I experienced a lot of trauma. It was a very difficult season in being bullied, not knowing the language, struggling. I had a great childhood growing up, but it was different. It looked different. I felt good. You had good confidence. I lost most of my self-confidence, self-worth through that process, because you start to feel, and then, you know, kids aren't always the kindest when you go through that. They tell you that, mm-hmm. and you start to believe that. And so that was kind of in my 20s. I really had to work on that. I was fortunate that I was able to access programs that I benefited from to work through some of those trauma pieces to put them in the right perspective. So to move on from that.
So what kind of tips would you have for us as Canadians when we have new people coming into our communities, especially to rural communities? What kind of things can we do better to lessen that trauma? What would, from your own personal experience, what would you have liked to have seen?
I would say listen, and then listen more. And try to listen when there's a little bit of silence. What are they not saying? For me, if somebody would have asked me a bunch of questions, I probably wouldn't have opened up. So it's not that, I'm not saying that that solves everything, but that certainly at the start, is there things to it that are underneath the surface? And if you take a little bit of time, get to know people, try to connect with people and listen. And particularly if people aren't integrating, that's concerning.
Well, and I think you bring up an interesting point. And thank you for sharing all of that. I think it's very, you know, it's important for people to know it isn't easy, right? There's a lot of things that happen. That integration piece is a big, it's key, right? You know, I talk a lot about, a lot of times companies hire people, they put them in the positions where they don't need any English, and then everyone goes home and speaks their first language. But then they're frustrated because they're not moving up in positions. And it's like, you need to integrate. And a big piece of that is the language, like you said, and talking about it and getting through some of these challenges. So it's a big piece of success in Canada to being able to grow and get into those positions people want to be in. And I think too, it's hard in the schools. Like I used to be a teacher in the education system. I mean, junior high is the hardest. You couldn't pay me enough to be a junior high teacher. I've got a junior high kids. I love them all, but you know, it's a tough time. And to come in to not have the language, I mean, that social friends is the number one thing, right? Everyone wants. And unfortunately right now, you know, there's not a lot of supports, I don't think, for newcomer kids in schools, you know, so it's a challenge.
Yeah, there's aspects too that the support is available. They're not just in the schools, but in the communities and families. I think if families can get connected, and the sooner that happens, there's different outlets. So if school isn't going too well, is there other outlets? Sometimes that's sports, sometimes that's friendships and family that's outside of that. But the more points of connections that you can have, then you're not reliant on one. So if one isn't going well, that there's other outlets.
Exactly. That's exact. And I like that. The more points of contact you have, a variety, the more opportunities you can have to exactly get what you need.
Yeah.
So Bill, we had you on here today because we really want to get to know your company, and we want to celebrate how well you've done in terms of just making all your employees, whether they be newcomers or just, you know, live their whole life here in Canada. We want to celebrate that. You know, so is there anything else you want to say? Is there any other messages you want our listeners to know? Because we'd love to hear it from you. You are the specialist in this industry.
Yeah, we try to leverage the people that are already here. So when we're recruiting, how the different channels are important, how we promote our business and offer the jobs that are there. But the people in the business are actually your best recruiters. So you can go to outside firms and hire them, but the people inside the walls, I would much rather pay them. And so that's what we've shifted over the last number of years, far more into a referral program. So today, if one of our drivers goes out and recruits another driver, there's $2,000 that goes to them over the first 6 months of that referred employee. Our shops, the same thing. Our BVT, we're typically looking for experienced mechanics. And if one of our existing mechanics refers somebody, it is $1,000 that they get. And we've paid out substantial amounts of money. Same thing on the wash bay. There's an $800 referral program. Then we have a number. I talked about the training and development subsidies. We have that. In addition to that, if there's a driver that gets hired, he's been driving for us for at least a year and he's in good standing with us. So then we will support them in buying their own truck. So if they want to get into their own truck and become an owner operator, we'll give them a $5,000 startup subsidy. And so that's not a loan. That's money that we pay to them to help them get started the first year. There's requirements then that we want from them to take some training, because they need to have a business plan that goes with that. So we try to keep the money inside, because if you're giving it to them, it makes us as a business more sticky, and hopefully they want to stay longer. It gives them an opportunity to go out and earn that money versus paying outside recruiters.
So just one more question, Bill, is that, so with my company, I specialize in the skilled trades. And so I often run into those who are fairly new to Canada in terms of, you know, they want their children to go on to university, and even themselves, they want to do that professional job. But knowing where the industry is specifically in skilled trades is heading and truck and transport, would you say you're just as competitive, if not more competitive, for a great career for newcomers in Canada? In terms Absolutely. Of like, do you have to go to university to, you know, be successful, or can you get a position with your company and be just as successful?
So first, if you know what your gifts and your talents are and what you're naturally geared towards, pursue that, because that's what's going to give you and drive you probably where you're going to have the most success. So if you're at that stage and you kind of know that, so if you want to be a doctor, go get at it. Like, we don't want to hold you back from that. But if you have you want to be a hands-on type of person, the trades end of it, there is plenty of opportunity. We have technicians that are making $40, $45 an hour. You can earn $100,000 being a mechanic. It might start at $20 an hour, but you can work your way through that. And there's plenty of opportunities. And I can tell you there's lots of work in that space. There's overtime if you want to work in that space. On the truck side, there's anywhere from early on as you're learning, yes, you're earning less. You might be in that $60,000, $65,000 a year, but we know for a fact, because we pull our annual T4, what drivers earn, and there's plenty of drivers that are in that $100,000, $90,000 to $110,000. So that's kind of the upper end of the spectrum. So there's lots that are sitting in that $80,000, $85,000. And a lot of our work, not all of it, but a lot of our work is regional. You might be gone one night, two nights. A lot of our guys are home every night. It might be starting early. And then we have obviously some that are gone for a week at a time, 5-6 days at a time. But there's plenty of ways and trades that are out there where there's really good money to be made.
And no school debt.
That's right. You can, and the beauty, if you become a technician, you can start, you can get some experience, some hours under your belt. Then you go to school while you're still employed, and there's plenty of subsidies and funds there. You keep your job, you keep your tenure, you keep your benefits, you come back and you get right back at it again.
Yeah. And I was going to add to all that too. And you live in rural, so it's cheaper. So you get way more out of your money too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cheaper, you know, and the air is clean.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's odd places where there's a heavy smell of money, but that's okay too.
We all like that smell.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you require, you know, a lot of times people talk about, you know, people aren't hiring me because I need Canadian experience. What are your thoughts on that? I always say, you know, it's not Canadian experience. It's really more about, you know, talking about maybe your experience from your home country and how does it transfer to what you're doing in the positions in Canada? What are your thoughts on that Canadian experience?
I love that question. Glad you brought it up. It's relevant experience. So there is a gap. So whether if you're, we have Filipinos, a lot of Filipinos. So if you've driven truck in the Philippines, it looks different. It is different than it is here. But there is some things that are still applicable. And then if you've gone out and gotten your license here, the biggest piece that we watch for, if you've never driven in winter, we do a winter training course before winter is here. So in fall time, any class one driver that has not gone through a winter will do some extra training. So yes, there are some Canadian specific things, but it's really, we try to focus on relevant work experience.
And what does your current hiring process look like? So let's say someone listens to this interview today, what would you recommend their next steps be? In terms of, you know, I'm all about, you know, it's important to network, have those connections, mm-hmm. you know, you don't just want an email, someone email saying, can you hire me? Like what do you want to see have happen for people wanting to apply?
Yeah. So if different positions are slightly different, but it all starts similar at the same place. You can go to our website, which is slt.ca. If you search Steve's Livestock Transport, there's a link there. You can go and apply. Someone will reach out to you. There's also several different social media outlets that you can send us messages through and somebody will reach out. So there's several different channels that way. And then somebody will get in touch with you. So there will be some basic questions online that will be asked. And then that'll kind of put you into a queue as far as what type of a job that you're looking for or whether you're applying for a specific job. And that starts the process. But reaching out, and then we're at a lot of different places as well. So if you are not necessarily looking for a job tomorrow and have some time, we're in several different trade fairs, the Brandon Winter Fair. We're at those places. So we're at a number of different events that you'll see us at.
Okay. And we'll have all those links in the show notes as well, so people can look there. So what you're saying is, you know, don't just wait till you see a job. It's okay to apply, even if there's not a specific position that people are looking. I think a lot of times people don't apply because they don't see a job, but you never know what's going to come tomorrow, right? So it's important. Yeah.
For a driver process, it's more, that's probably the longer process, because you have to have all your work history related to that. You need to provide your driver's abstract. So that process is longer. There's a several interview process. We then do a driver evaluation. So we want you to come in. We want to see if you can drive, what level you're at. And because we're handling with livestock, we really want everyone to do a ride along. So take a day and spend a day with our existing guys that are on the road. So we have a number of them that would gladly take you along, and you can see what it's done. So if it's not a fit, then we want you to know that very early on.
Yeah, and they say 80% of the jobs that are open, no one sees. You only see 20% of the job market. So point too, is that you just need to apply to different companies and you never know. And also building your network is a very good thing. So anyways, well, I think that that wraps it up for us today, right? Bill, I could actually talk to you, Bill, or listen to you for hours, because this is so fascinating. And I think you've really developed a wonderful company, and we just really appreciate, your industry and the businesses within your industry and how well you guys take care of your employees. So thank you so much from us here.
Before we finish, I have two more questions, if that's okay. I like to ask, in terms of spouses, what are your opportunities for spouses, right? If someone's coming, let's say from Toronto, their partner might want, do you have a lot of maybe partners that both partners work at your, or how have you found that challenge?
Yeah, so we have a number of jobs. So for example, if they're interested in driving, we have a lot of couples that are team drivers. So they might not be a full team. So we have several of them where the spouse doesn't work full time. They only go on certain amount of runs. So that is on the driving side, that's the number one. And then we have a number of different positions where there's husband and wife working here. So we have a variety of opportunities. So if one wants to drive or be a mechanic, the other one in administration, we have those positions as well. And we also try to help them. We're fortunate with the regions that we're in that there is a lot of networks in our communities and opportunities. So if it's not that, we can help them and connect them to different groups. So if there isn't a job here, most of the time our recruiting people, they know what's in the community and what's available in the community.
Okay, so you kind of have those connections that you can at least, if there's not an opportunity with you, you can connect them to other opportunities so that they can, that's great. And are there any positions as well that require French in your company?
It's not a requirement, but it's a benefit, because we, even though we're in Western Canada, our trucking is all over North America. So we regularly truck into Eastern Canada. We're into all over the United States. So we move loads of livestock to Texas, Florida, New York, Illinois, lots into the grain belt, into Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, that area there, but all over North America is where we truck.
Well, see, with your job opportunities, people can see like all the United States and Canada. So that's a bonus in itself.
It is. It is.
So yes, I think, Lindsay, did you have any more questions? Or
no, that is good, because if I keep going, I'll just keep going. That's the way how I am.
Well, I'm going to ask you one more, just because we want to, like I said, we're big believers in rural and supporting rural areas. So can you tell us, what is one, maybe a favorite rural restaurant or even just a favorite rural place that you like to go to, just so we can, you know, showcase that today?
So I like Mexican food. And so anywhere, any place that has a good Mexican place, and there is one particular thing that I can't remember the name, but it's in Brandon. It's right by City Hall. It is by my favorite Mexican restaurant. Every time I go to Brandon, and everybody in the office there knows already, if we're going for lunch or going for dinner, they know where I'll be.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. I know exactly where that is. And it's great dishes there. So definitely. And I forget the name as well. So we'll also put that on.
We'll find the link. I did an exchange to Mexico. So Mexican food is my food. I love Mexican food. I will be stopping in Brandon. We actually, I don't know if you know this, but Lindsay and I are both actually farmers. We both farm a little bit. So I'll be stopping there.
Awesome.
I'm on my way to the family farm. So great.
If I could just yes. add something.
Sure.
Part of the business and part of what early on in my career, I was working in a job and I had just come out of a meeting and I showed up to work. I worked hard. I love what I do and what I did back then, and came out of a meeting where I just felt deflated. There was a lot of criticism. There was a lot of, it should have been better than what it was. And I always thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. Like, I want to show up to work. I want to work hard. I want to help the company be successful. And I want to have fun doing it. And I feel super excited and blessed that I get to do that today. We're part of working with people. We want to be successful with people. We want others to be successful. I have a firm belief that if we help people be successful, undoubtedly, we as a business will be successful. We're far from perfect. We have many things that aren't perfect, but we strive to help others be successful. And in turn, we will be successful. So building into people, we talk a lot about, we want to take care of people. Those people that take care of us, we want to take care of them, and we want to go above and beyond and taking care of them. Those that want to take advantage of us, I want to move on as quickly as we possibly can. But those that take care of us, I want to take care of them. And I think we can have a lot of fun and build a beautiful thing if we do that.
100. I think you have it. When you invest in your employees, they invest in you. And that's really the key to success, I think. Yeah. You said
and
it.
And I love it because the grass isn't greener always on the other side, right? And so people always think, well, you know, I'll start with this and I'll move on to there. But, you know, as a person, no matter where you're from, you always should give any type of job your best shot, because you never know where it will take you. It may not be mm-hmm. something that you planned, but I think the path less walked is often the path best, you know, is the one that turns out the best for people. So I think that's a really great point to make.
We did a employee survey a few years ago and asked them what kind of a company they wanted to be part of. It was part of us building our value system. And there was three things that they really came back to us, and we summarized it. And we went back and forth with our employees numerous times. And they recognized that we're not perfect. They don't mind reminding us of the things that we could do better. But they said, we want to be part of that. So let's make it better together. Was the slogan that they came up with. They want us to act with integrity. So as a whole, when nobody is looking, that we'll do the right thing. And they said, we want you to listen. You can respond openly and candidly, but listen. So those were the three things that our employees came back to us and said, this is what we want to be part of. We want to be part of an organization where collectively we can make it together, where we'll act with integrity, where we'll listen and respond openly.
100%. That's amazing. Thank you for that. Well, thank you once again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Thank you to our listeners for listening to another amazing company. People, if you are interested, we're going to have all the information in the show notes. So I definitely recommend checking it out, applying, and checking out the communities as well. We'll have information on that. So thank you again.
Yes, Phil, thank you very much. You have a great company, and I want to thank our listeners. And until next time, remember, live rural, live well. Thank you.
If you feel this could assist other people like yourself, please like and share our podcast. As well, we will leave links below to the topics we spoke about today. Thank you for listening, and join us next time to learn about another great company and community that is a great place to work and settle.